offering a most loving pranam at Bhagwan's lotus feet. Dear listeners, we welcome you to this week's episode of Shravanam Mananam Nididhyasanam. Before all else, warm greetings on this most auspicious occasion of Deepavali. It's so wonderful to join you all once again on this beautiful Deepavali day. For those of you who've been with us in this journey, it's towards the very fag end of this journey that we are at right now, because we are in the 13th discourse of the 1991 Samukho series, which we've been following, and we are most probably going to complete that last discourse today. So it's wonderful to do that on a very special day as this one, the Deepavali day. So before we summarize what we heard from Swami last week, and before we go to the last clip that we'll be having in this discourse, let's invite Hari to join all of us. Sai Ram Hari.
Sai Ram Priyam. Happy Deepavali to you and to all the listeners.
Thank you. Yeah. And it's so wonderful. I mean, every festival, even as this morning we were talking, Arvind and myself, how Swami has given the inner significance of Deepavali. I mean, that's the beauty of celebrating any festival in Swami's presence. As you were just mentioning just before we started, about what was Swami's response to this idea of bursting crackers. And Swami was so childlike, and Swami enjoyed it. And we've seen that. I still recall that beautiful scene of Swami sitting outside Purnachandra, and the ground in front of Purnachandra used to be where the crackers used to be burst. And right in front of Swami would be the primary school kids. And the sequence would be like this. The primary school kids will be seeing the crackers, and they'll be going ooh and ah and bright and all that. Seeing them, Swami will light up, and we will be sitting facing Swami, just looking at Swami's expression. And, you know, it used to be so wonderful, and that it's a complete celebration in that sense, because as somebody once pointed out, there is enough for all the senses. You know, there is beauty for the eyes to see, there is music for the ears, and, you know, of course, the prasadam is always there. But always that significance of that festival, the inner meaning of that festival, Swami would never miss the opportunity to drive that home. So in that sense, that is why every celebration in Parthi was complete in that sense.
And interestingly, that small tradition of having the fireworks display right outside Swami's residence, that continues. So a number of students are still here during it's a vacations time, but a lot of students are still here. And so they all congregate every Diwali evening like this, and they all do the fireworks display. So Swami's throne is kept there, and prasadam is distributed, everything just like as it used to be.
Right.
And so that is when, you know, I was standing next to a person who had the opportunity of serving Bhagwan during such times. So I used to ask him, like, what was Swami's reaction? Was it something that he used to tolerate because the students like to have a good time, mm-hmm. in his presence? Or is something in which he joined in, like very enthusiastically. So I had this person and another primary school student, you know.
Okay.
So they gave me their first hand version of mm-hmm. what used to happen. And the primary school student used to say, you know, that at that time, there used to be some of these, what we call as bombs, right? So what they used to do was, Swami would go and light some of them. So they used to extend the fuse so that there's a lag, you know. So they used to make sure of that. So the idea was that Swami would be at a safe distance away from it when the bomb blasts. And he used to say, Swami used to light it, and then very gracefully, casually, Swami used to take his own sweet time to walk away. And he said, you know, our hearts are in our mouth, but we realize that Swami knows exactly when that bomb is going to go off.
Beautiful.
So he used to know exactly when, and he used to pace himself accordingly.
Right. I mean, the other beautiful thing is, Swami would come out, and I think the maintenance department in the hostel would come up with a contraption of, you know, Swami can press a button and the first set of crackers would start bursting. They would have a huge, whatever you call that, a long 100
bar. Garland
of crackers. So Swami would come and, you know, press the button and it would start bursting. And I recall one year, what they would do is, I mean, the circuit would be there. So just in case something goes wrong, because there's so much of crowd around, they would also have a standby where, mm-hmm. you know, they would do that and it would trigger the bursting of the crackers. I think something happened. They were testing and it went off.
Went off.
Huh? And Swami just came in. The door opened, Swami came in. It looked like they had timed it to, you know, go off when Swami came in. But Swami was, you know, like a child. Swami said, "Who burst the crackers?" "No, I was supposed to do that. Who did it?" And for the next 5 minutes, Swami was looking around and asking all the elders, "Hey, did you press the button? Did you press the button?" You know, so sweetly. And I mean, that's the thing, you know, every festival is really complete in that sense. So it's so beautiful that we are celebrating a festival of light. At the same time, we are speaking about another form of light which Swami has, you know, given all of us, and that is his discourses. And it's been a beautiful journey, to say the least, the 1991 Summer Course series. It's been so complex, and also it really added so many dimensions to the way we are looking at our life and looking at Swami's message. I think we should be very, very grateful for that. And literally, like a beautiful summation of all that we heard in all the previous 12 discourses, this one is such a practical discourse where Swami is, I mean, after all that, we all come to the point of, what am I supposed to do now? What should my action right now be? And I think the whole discourse is an answer to that question, where Swami is speaking about dharma, which is the most important aspect of human life, literally. And the clip which we played last time, Swami is speaking about the importance of devotion in dharma, which is a very important thing. It's not about a very monotonous, dry way of following ethics and morality, but without that basis, and Swami has said this on multiple occasions, that even for the idea of spirituality, that basis being bhakti is very, very important.
Yeah, and you see various spiritual luminaries have also pointed in the same direction. If you look at the life of Shankaracharya, you see the same thing. So Shankaracharya, he was the exponent of perhaps the most abstract form of spirituality that there is, you know, the Advaita, which literally has no place for God other than who you are.
Right.
And even then he used to insist that there should be this element of devotion. We look at the life of Raman Maharishi also, we see the exact same thing, that sometimes when the name of the Lord was spoken in his presence, he would literally tear up.
Right.
So because of that extreme love that he had, you know, so that name for him, you know, we were speaking about Namaskarana a couple of segments back. So the association is very strong, that name and divinity.
Right.
The moment a person of such evolution is very, very sensitive to that, it takes just a moment for them to cross over, you know, into that ecstasy of, you know, merger with the divine or beholding divinity itself. Like, so when that happens, that devotion is not so far away. Right? It's like very closely associated. And as you yourself had pointed out, for many of us Sai devotees, the path of spirituality itself opens up on account of some strange, you know, that affection developing towards Bhagwan. Right?
Right.
If I have to look at my life, I don't think spirituality would ever have entered into it. We were definitely an orthodox family and followed all the rituals. But the element of actually looking at the Upanishads, what is the message, what are they trying to convey, you know, all of that was actually, the path was lit by Bhagwan. I don't see it happening any other way.
Yeah. Right, right. In fact, as part of the afternoon satsang which we were doing this morning, there is a little conversation which Swami writes about in the Bhagavata Vaini, where the conversation between Lord Brahma and Narada, where Brahma explains the whole idea of creation. He says that, you know, I create beings, I create the laws which will define the way the beings interact in the world. And then he says that is what we refer to as dharma. But when they stray from that dharma, chaos comes, and then the Lord has to incarnate and all of that. But then he drops this beautiful hint. He says the whole distortion or the chaos comes about because of this idea that people are straying away from dharma. And the only solution for that is if people lead their life remembering what is the purpose of life. Right? And then he says it becomes very, very easy when there is devotion in the heart. When there is devotion in the heart, automatically that the idea of the attachment to purpose is there. And when there is attachment to purpose, the dharma in society is automatically expressed. So literally that's precisely what Swami is telling here. Probably the other way around, where Swami is saying that you've now learnt all the spiritual truths, and now that spiritual truth has to be expressed as dharma, and Swami is saying that for that you need devotion as the basis, as the inspiration. And I think that was one of the things which we went through in the discourse. Apart from that, Swami was talking about giving the example of Prahlada and how he was unfazed when he was put through those trials. And Swami made that beautiful point of, you know, Prahlada was just like you. He was also a student. You know, he was also a young boy. And then very nicely Swami explained what was the characteristic, what is the nature of Prahlada which you will have to try to emulate. And in that context, Swami was saying that, you know, he did not have any animosity towards his father or his teachers for what he was put through. But all the time he was trying to reason out with them. He was trying to calmly explain to them, suggesting that that is one quality that all of you have to pick up. And then Swami was saying that when he was faced with troubles, he was not at all, he was not cursing his fate, he was not upset with the Lord, but he was only thinking of the Lord more, and that was how he managed to get through that period.
And stuck to his values, stuck to his principles throughout. Right. So Swami is also hinting that this devotion to the Lord is therefore something that keeps us steady on that path of one spirituality, on the path of dharma also, because ultimately when the entire world is saying, you know, you choose this path which will benefit you or your kith and kin. On the other hand, you have something which the path of dharma, which says that, you know, you follow this and you'll please the Lord. I can't think of a stronger reason to do that than to have devotion to the Lord.
Right.
Because for us, maybe like at our where we stand, I think the concept of actual divinity, you know, like we, being sprouting in our heart, etc., that seems like such a foreign idea to us.
Mm.
Whereas the idea that the Lord will be pleased, like Swami will be pleased by this particular action, now that has a lot of traction.
Mm.
So it's, that's why Swami is, you know, handing out this very, very, very simple option. Because I was also thinking of this, you know, when we come to Bhagwan, right? See, we, the first thing is Swami says you have to control your senses, you have to speak softly. These are the first things you begin to hear.
Right.
And then out of devotion to the Lord, you want to start implementing those, and you hit a roadblock. Because immediately you see that you do not have that level of control over the mind in order to do these things.
Exactly.
And that's when you start inquiring, like, what has Swami said that in relation to this? How do I control my senses? How do I exercise ceiling on my desires?
Right.
All this inquiry starts. And then you, Swami, you know, gently he leads into the depth of the scriptures itself, where the answers have been given to us by the sages like eons ago.
Right.
Right. And so gently Swami leads us into this path, but the undercurrent is definitely bhakti towards
right.
Lord.
And I mean, that's one thing which gets very clear as we're going through the discourses. And we eventually end up comparing what Swami says in his discourses with many of the New Age masters who you know, come up with their philosophy. One very, very striking factor about Swami, for that matter, any genuine guru in that sense, is the, you know, how closely it relates to Vedanta. As Swami would say, one of the tasks which I come for is Veda Poshana, which means that the message is not new. It's not going to be modern, or it's not going to be something new age. It is going to be eternal. It's going to be given in a modern context. That is what we are saying. I mean, of course, the whole series is about Upanishads. But even otherwise, Swami's discourses were always, you know, reiterating that same truth which the Upanishads spoke about, the Vedas spoke about, what is expounded in the Gita. And just because it makes you uneasy, just because it makes you uncomfortable, you cannot change the truths.
Or it's unfashionable.
Right, because it's unfashionable.
Yeah.
In fact, talking about Deepavali, there's a wonderful analogy which Swami gives. It's very apt to what Swami is talking about Prahlada. I think in one discourse Swami had made this analogy where you have a room which is filled with people and the room does not have any light. You can understand the chaos which would happen. I think we used to play a game called the dark room when we were in school and close all the doors and switch off all the lights, and you know. So Swami was saying that imagine the chaos in that room, and how do you sort out that chaos? You need light. So Swami was saying that you don't need every person in that room to carry a light. Even if one person in the room has a small light in his hand, there can still be order in that whole room. Swami is saying same is the case with somebody who follows dharma. Don't ask, I'm the only person who's going to change. If I follow dharma, what difference is it going to make to the world? Swami is saying that even if that one person follows dharma, it's like that one person holding a lamp in a dark room. And it will make a difference. You may not know it, but it does make a difference. And I think that's what Swami says in this part, which we played out last week. You know, Swami is saying that one son like Prahlada is good enough. Right, you know, you all should strive to become like him, and if you have to be a son, you should be like him. Right? I think that was the point where we stopped, where Swami was talking to students, addressing this particular point directly to students about Prahlada and how good a son and how that quality of Prahlada should be emulated. So I think we'll go to the next clip, which is also the last clip in this discourse. I think we'll discuss what Swami says in this, and maybe we can summarize the whole discourse and wind up with that.
Vidya anaga kevalamu grantha parichayam matrame kadane satyanni Anil Kumar intapurame cheppadu.
The truth that education is not merely bookish knowledge was mentioned by Anil Kumar before this.
Meghamulu minti pai cheri medaluchunda వాటి దాపున విద్వత్తు వరలునట్లు విద్య వెనుకల జ్ఞానంబు వెలయవలయు.
As the clouds gather and hover above us, like the lightning that hides behind them, wisdom must be concealed in education.
మన హృదయం అనేటువంటి ఆకాశంలో దట్టమైన మేఘములు కప్పినప్పుడు.
When the sky of our hearts is overcast with the thick clouds of feelings,
దాంట్లో దైవ చింతన అనేటువంటి యొక్క తేజస్సు లైట్నింగ్ వచ్చేసినప్పుడు.
And there when the lightning of thoughts of God appear,
తద్వారా ఎంత శాంతి ఎంత ప్రకాశము మనలో ఆవిర్భవిస్తుంది.
Through that immense peace and illumination will manifest in us.
కనుక మన యొక్క భావములు ఏ రీతిగా మనం చింతించాలి?
So how must our feelings be?
మన హృదయమే ఆకాశము.
Our heart is the sky.
మన భావములే మేఘములు.
Our feelings are the clouds.
మన మనసే చంద్రుడు.
Our mind is the moon.
మన బుద్ధే సూర్యుడు.
Our intellect is the sun.
కానీ అప్పుడప్పుడు దట్టమైనటువంటి ఈ వయసు లోపల దట్టమైనటువంటి మేఘములు గప్పుతుంటుంటాయి ఈ హృదయాకాశములో.
But now and then in this age, thick clouds hover over our sky of the heart.
ఆకాశంలో దట్టమైన మేఘములు కప్పినప్పుడు.
When such thick clouds cover the sky,
ఈ మనసు బుద్ధి అనేటువంటి సూర్యచంద్రాదులు మరుగైపోతారు.
ద మైండ్ అండ్ ద ఇంటెలెక్ట్ విచ్ ఆర్ ద సన్ అండ్ ద మూన్ విల్ డిసపియర్.
కానీ ఎంతసేపు మరుగవుతారు?
బట్ హౌ లాంగ్ వుడ్ దే బి ఇన్విజిబుల్?
ఎంతసేపు మాత్రమే.
ఓన్లీ ఫర్ అ షార్ట్ వైల్.
ఈ మేఘములు కదిలిపోయే మేఘములు కానీ స్థిరమైన మేఘములు కావు.
దీస్ క్లౌడ్స్ ఆర్ పాసింగ్ క్లౌడ్స్ అండ్ నాట్ పర్మనెంట్ వన్స్.
కొంతసేపు మనం ఓపిక పట్టుకుంటే ఆ యొక్క భావములు, ఆ యొక్క ఉద్రేకములు, ఉల్లాసములు అవన్నీ క్రమక్రమేణ మార్పు చెందుతాయి.
ఇఫ్ వీ హ్యావ్ పేషెన్స్, ఆల్ ద ఫీలింగ్స్, ఎమోషన్స్ అండ్ ఎక్సైట్మెంట్స్ విల్ ఈవెన్చువలీ చేంజ్.
మార్పు చెందిన తక్షణమే, కదిలిన తక్షణమే మన స్వస్వరూపాన్ని మనం దర్శించవచ్చు.
As soon as the change happens and clouds get cleared, we can witness our true form.
అప్పుడే మన యొక్క మనోబుద్ధులు మనకు ప్రకాశిస్తుంటాయి.
దెన్ అలోన్ ఆర్ మైండ్ అండ్ ఇంటెలెక్ట్ షైన్ ఫోర్త్.
ఒకరికి శాంతమును మనం పోషించుకోవాలి.
సో వీ నీడ్ టు డెవలప్ పీస్.
శాంతాన్ని మనం సాధించాలి.
వీ మస్ట్ అచీవ్ పీస్.
ఈనాటి పిల్లలు మనములోపలే ఉద్రేకము.
టుడేస్ చిల్డ్రన్ బికమ్ ఎమోషనల్ విద్ ఇన్ అ సెకండ్.
ఏమాత్రం దానికి అవకాశం అందించరాదు.
వన్ షుడ్ నాట్ గివ్ స్కోప్ ఫర్ సచ్ ఎ థింగ్.
ఈనాటి జగత్తు లోపల విద్యార్థుల యొక్క విప్లవము ఈ విధమైనటువంటి ఉద్రేకములతోనే కూడి ఉంటుండాలి.
ఇన్ టుడేస్ వరల్డ్ స్టూడెంట్స్ రెబెలియస్ నేచర్ ఇస్ అటాచ్డ్ టు సచ్ ఎమోషన్స్.
అది వేడి రక్తం యొక్క ప్రభావము.
దట్ ఈస్ ది ఎఫెక్ట్ ఆఫ్ హాట్ బ్లడ్.
సహజము.
ఫర్ దాట్ ఏజ్ ఇట్ ఇస్ క్వైట్ న్యాచురల్.
కానీ మనం అది సహజంగా భావించరాదు.
బట్ వీ షుడెంట్ కన్సిడర్ ఇట్ న్యాచురల్. Right from that age, our strengths and abilities must be utilized. We have to control our senses from that age itself.
ఏదో వయసు అయిన తర్వాత వృద్ధుడైన తర్వాత అప్పుడు ఇంద్రియ శక్తిని సాధించాలంటే ఏ సాధ్యమవుతుంది?
ఆఫ్టర్ వన్ గ్రోస్ ఓల్డ్ అండ్ ఏజ్డ్ ఇఫ్ ద పవర్స్ ఆఫ్ ద సెన్సెస్ ఆర్ టు బి హార్నెస్డ్ హౌ ఇస్ ఇట్ పాసిబుల్?
ఇంకా కొంతమంది ఈ వయసు లోపల భగవత్ చింతన ఎందుకు?
సమ్ అదర్స్ క్వశ్చన్ వై కాంటెంప్లేట్ గాడ్ ఇన్ దిస్ ఏజ్?
చక్కగా ఉద్యోగం చేసి ధనమును సంపాదించి వృద్ధాప్యము లోపల ఏదో మంచం పైన కూర్చొని రామరామ అనుకుంటే అంత మాత్రం చాలదా అనుకుంటారు.
దే ఫీల్ ఇసంట్ ఇట్ ఎనఫ్ ఇఫ్ ఆఫ్టర్ వర్కింగ్ హార్డ్ ఇన్ అ జాబ్ అండ్ ఎర్నింగ్ వెల్త్ డ్యూరింగ్ ఓల్డ్ ఏజ్ వన్ సిట్స్ ఆన్ అ కాట్ అండ్ చాన్స్ రామ రామ.
ఇంకా కొంతమంది రిటైర్డ్ అయిన తర్వాత మేము ఆధ్యాత్మిక సంస్థల్లో ప్రవేశిస్తామంటారు.
ఫ్యూ అదర్ పీపుల్ సే వి విల్ జాయిన్ అ స్పిరిచువల్ ఆర్గనైజేషన్ ఆఫ్టర్ రిటైర్మెంట్.
ఈ రిటైర్మెంట్ ఏమాత్రం కూడా అంత్యం లేదు.
దేర్ ఇస్ నో ఎండ్ టు దిస్ రిటైర్మెంట్.
రిపేర్ చేసుకుని పోతుంటుంటారు.
దే అగైన్ రిపేర్ అండ్ కీప్ గోయింగ్.
మరి ఏదో ఒక ఉద్యోగం లోపల కూడా ప్రవేశిస్తుంటారు.
దే అగైన్ టేక్ అప్ సమ్ అదర్ జాబ్.
వచ్చేంత వరకు ధనవాస మాత్రం వీరు వదలరు.
టిల్ దే డై దే విల్ నాట్ గివ్ అప్ ద డిజైర్ ఫర్ మనీ.
ఇంకా ఎప్పుడు వీరు ఆధ్యాత్మికంలో ప్రవేశించేది?
దెన్ వెన్ విల్ దే ఎంటర్ ద స్పిరిచువల్ పాత్? When the agents of death pull at the nose and hurry you, at the time when relatives take your body outside and declare it's of no use anymore, when your wife and children cry and bemoan, is it possible for the lips to chant Hari's name?
అప్పుడు హరి హరి అని చెప్పడానికి సాధ్యమవుతుంది.
విల్ ఇట్ బి పాసిబుల్ టు చాంట్ ద నేమ్ ఆఫ్ హరి అట్ దాట్ పాయింట్ ఇన్ టైమ్?
అసాధ్యం.
ఇట్ ఈస్ ఇంపాసిబుల్. ఇంపాసిబుల్ ఇన్ డీడ్.
కనుక ఈ వయసు నుండే మనము దీనిని పోషించుకోవాలి.
సో ఫ్రమ్ దిస్ ఎర్లీ ఏజ్ ఇట్ సెల్ఫ్ వీ నీడ్ టు కల్టివేట్ ఇట్.
ఎర్లీ డ్రైవ్ స్లోలీ రీచ్ సేఫ్. ఈ వయసు లోపలనే మనం దీన్ని ఆధ్యాత్మిక చింతన మనం క్రోడీకరించుకోవాలి.
Start early, drive slowly and reach safely. We need to develop the spiritual thinking from this age itself. If you don't fill up your tanks with water in the rainy season itself, how will you enjoy it during the summer? So, from this early age itself, we must fill the tank of our heart with divinity. We can utilize it during our old age like pension. Students must put suitable efforts for the same.
కనుక ఎవరేమి చెప్పినప్పటికీ మీ విద్యతో పాటు ఈ ఆధ్యాత్మిక విద్యను కూడా అనుసరించాలి.
Anyone may say anything. Along with secular education, you must follow spiritual education too. A bicycle with only one wheel is dangerous any day. Even with two wheels, it is quite dangerous. Will not a cycle with a single wheel cause danger?
ఒక రెక్కతో ఉండినప్పుడు ఏ పక్షి కూడా నువ్వు గగనానికి ఎగరదు.
A bird with a single wing cannot fly up to the sky.
రెండు రెక్కలు చక్కగా ఉండినప్పుడే గగన ప్రయాణం చేస్తుంది.
Only when both wings are fine, it would fly up to the sky.
మానవునికి ఇహమును సుఖింప హేమతారక విద్య, పరమును సుఖింప బ్రహ్మ విద్య.
So for man, that which grants happiness here is worldly knowledge. That which grants supreme happiness is the knowledge of Brahman. Learn the knowledge which is related to this world. Also study the spiritual teachings. Basing on both these alone, we must spend our life.
విద్యార్థులారా,
స్టూడెంట్స్,
కాలమునంతా కూడాను కేవలం లౌకికము భౌతికమైనటువంటి దానికి వ్యర్థము చేయకండి.
డు నాట్ వేస్ట్ ఆల్ యువర్ టైమ్ ఇన్ ఫిజికల్ అండ్ వర్ల్డ్లీ మ్యాటర్స్.
ఈ యొక్క జీవితములకు గమ్యమైనటువంటి ధన్యమైనటువంటి యొక్క దివ్యమైనటువంటి భావాన్ని కూడా కొంతకాలము సార్థకం చేసుకోండి.
స్పెండ్ సమ్ టైమ్ మీనింగ్ఫుల్లీ ఇన్ సచ్ డివైన్ ఫీలింగ్స్ దట్ మేక్ లైఫ్ పర్పస్ఫుల్ అండ్ బ్లెస్డ్.
ఈ విధమైన యొక్క విద్యార్థులు జగత్తులో అభివృద్ధి అయినప్పుడే భారతదేశము తిరిగి ప్రాచీనమైనటువంటి యొక్క సంస్కృతిని అనుభవిస్తూ కలకలలాడుతూ కిలకిల నవ్వుతుంది.
Only when such students abound in this world, India will again experience its ancient culture, shine and reverberate with smiles.
దేశాన్ని కాని వ్యక్తిని కాని సమాజంను కాని సంరక్షించేటువంటి శక్తి ఒక దైవ శక్తి తప్ప అన్య శక్తులకు ఏమాత్రం కూడా ఇందులో ఏమాత్రం అవకాశం లేదు.
Be it country, individual or society, the power to protect rests entirely with the divine and it is impossible for any other form of power.
కనుక ఆ దివ్య శక్తిని మీరు అభివృద్ధి కాంచుకోండి.
So you develop that divine strength.
ఆ శక్తి మీరు పోషించినటువంటిది కాదు, సంపాదించుకున్నటువంటిది కాదు, శక్తి.
This divine power is not one developed or earned by you. It is an innate power.
ఇది నీ యొక్క దివ్యత్వం.
This is your divinity.
అందువలనే ఏకోవశే సర్వభూతాంతరాత్మ అని ఒకే దివ్యత్వం అందరి యందు ఉన్నదనేటువంటి సత్యాన్ని ప్రబోధిస్తూ వచ్చాయి మన వేదాంత గ్రంథములు.
That is why the Vedantic scriptures have been instructing, one and the same divinity is present in everyone.
మొట్టమొదటి విద్యార్థులు అహంకారాన్ని నిర్మూలన చేసుకోవాలి.
First and foremost, students should get rid of their ego.
విద్యార్థులను పెంచుకోవాలి.
They need to cultivate humility and obedience.
పెద్దలు చెప్పేటువంటి దాన్ని శాంతంగా మనం విని దాన్ని సరైన రీతిలో విచారించి అందులో ప్రవేశించాలి.
We must listen to elders calmly, inquire into the right manner, and then embark into it.
అహంకారమే మానవుని చాలా అంధునిగా చేస్తుంటుండాలి.
It is ego that blinds man.
కనుక అహంకారంకు మాత్రం అవకాశం ఇవ్వకూడదు.
Therefore, give no scope for ego.
విద్యార్థులారా,
students,
14 దినముల నుంచి కూడాను మీరు నేర్చుకున్నటువంటి విషయం లోపల ఏ కించిత్ భాగమునైనా కూడాను మీరు హృదయం నందుంచుకొని తద్వారా ఆచరణందు పెట్టి తగినటువంటి ఆదర్శాన్ని కూడాను అందిస్తారని నేను ఆశిస్తూ ఆశీర్వదిస్తూ నా ప్రసంగాన్ని విరమిస్తున్నాను.
From all that you have learnt in the last 14 days, Bhagwan wishes that at least a fraction of it is taken to your heart, thereby put into practice and the necessary example is set. With blessings, Bhagwan brings his discourse to a close.
That is the last part of the last discourse of the 1991 Samukho series. And even as I was listening to that last 10 minutes, it looks like if you had missed the entire Samukhos, if you had missed the entire first 40 minutes of this discourse, I think even that 10 minutes gives you enough tips for the rest of your life. Because Swami was telling so many things, literally the essence of all what Swami has been talking, Swami is putting in point form. As students, what you can start doing right away. Very, very simple tips. You know, direct tips, more than simple. It's not simple because it's going to take a lot of effort to follow it. But very clearly what you can start doing right away. I think that's what that whole clip was about. Very, very crisp points.
Swami mentions like how he's making a reference to Professor Anil Kumar's talk before the discourse, where he spoke to the students that education is not mere familiarity with books. I think like the present education system we see is like so far away from this ideal.
Right.
And at this stage, of course, Swami is cautioning the students to adhere to this idea. But at the same time, I think it is important that we take notice of this, right? That as the teachers who are listening to these discourses, or even parents, right? That somewhere there is an element of education that Swami is pointing. He's pointed it out repeatedly in these discourses, and we got to sit up and take notice that there is that element missing, which prepares the students that when they step into society as responsible members of society, what all they should look for. Because it becomes too late, you know, once they've stepped into society. Because every time we see a public figure or a celebrity or someone who commits a crime which the mind is unable to grasp, we always look back and see like what input was missing, right, for that person, or how did that person turn out that way. But for society at large, you know, that how, what is it that we need to bring into education? And I see that there is one very important requisite. When I go back and look at the teachers that I've had throughout, and the ones that influenced me most were not merely in the spheres of education. They excelled at their field, no doubt.
Right.
But at the same time, they were excellent people too. And there's something about the way they carried themselves, the way their being, like I have just a mysterious term called being, their beingness, which is what used to transmit that values. So it is for the teachers, it's on the one side a responsibility and a great opportunity for them to actually develop themselves as paragons to their own students. It's very vital, you know, because it is pretty simple to master your subject, go and teach it. While that is important, I think we should look at how teachers can see the opportunity in that to further their own improvement. That, because that's how the students look up to their teachers. Because Swami used to insist upon this, you know, he used to say like, as is the water tank or the, you know, that is the nature of the tap or the water that flows out of the tap.
Right? Right.
So because teachers are in direct contact with the students. And again, Swami brings out one very beautiful point, really. It's very, very important to note the subtlety with which Swami dealt with this subject of the agitations which the teen or the youth mind undergoes. While on the one side, Swami is saying that's a very natural thing to happen, right? It does happen at that age. And yet Swami is not, he's saying that although it is natural, you should not accept it as something that is routine and that cannot be controlled by you. So Swami says you should therefore start developing, this is a stage at which you can start developing that kind of self-control, which will then stand you in stead later. Like, because we see, you know, how many people, while we are quite indulgent with youth, you know, I recall that first when I started out my job, and I look back at horror at some of the things that I said and done, right? But the people were a little bit indulgent at that time. You know, you say you give that allowance for that age, right? However, if we don't make that constant effort, then we notice that we forever remain children. You look at how many adults and you look at their behavior, you say, okay, you know, they've grown physically, but I don't see any, you know, any of the mental or the emotional intelligence appearing anywhere in their behavior. Right? So that is why Swami is cautioning that although it is quite natural for it to happen at that age, that does not give you the leeway to therefore indulge in it, saying that it is natural for my age. Mm-hmm. That you should start making the efforts then and there.
I mean, as you very beautifully pointed out, it's a call to the parents and the teachers also. You know, when Swami is talking about this phase in adolescence, he's saying that, you know, it's like a phase where the sky is covered with clouds. And if you look at it, one of the mistakes which we are doing, and which Swami has also pointed out on many occasions, is giving the right to determine to people in that age. I mean, when you as elders, when you as parents understand that that's an age where your discrimination is actually a little lower than it should be,
right,
you will look at strengthening it. At the same time, you will not give complete ownership of choice to that person. And that's what Swami is saying, that you know, you cannot you are not in a position to make right decisions. You need the guidance of people. And that also goes on to the other point. I mean, just jumping the whole thing, what Swami said right in the end. Swami said, you know, the idea that you are divine is natural. It is there within you. It doesn't come from outside. But it's all about creating that environment around that person where it comes from within. And if you look at probably what parents are undergoing today, it's that struggle between creating opportunities which need monetary input, like the right kind of school or the right kind of training, and the opportunity of them being physically present at such an important age and guiding the child directly.
Absolutely.
I think the tone between that. So if there is a debate in your mind, I think Swami is saying that you need to give time physically as parents, as teachers to that age, because that's the age you need to mold. And as Swami is saying in the rest of the clip, that if you miss it now, you cannot expect them to become very responsible citizens later. I mean, because this is the time you need to mold them.
Not only that, see, there's one more important aspect which we used to watch, like Swami in action. See, what happens is this, that, okay, we have this kind of input going in, say, up to the age of 17 or 21, right, when they finish their graduation, and up to then we have that kind of input. But Swami used to watch even us like hawk, like when we have joined as staff over here, our behavior, starting from whether we were going on time to the office, or if, you know, reports used to come that for any reason we have displeased the boss, we used to get input on, you know, like maintain, you should, how do you say, like maintain the mores of the place, you know, such inputs we used to get. And Swami used to, therefore, even to a certain age, he used to make sure that we continue on that path. And this is where I think a lot of education is missing, because I can see that, you know, the youth, when they first step into their job, I think right now that is the most vulnerable period, because that's when the money suddenly is coming into their hands, right? And that's when they get the sense of independence also. And at that point of time, I think society is presently missing the opportunity to counsel on how to conduct yourself then.
Mm-hmm.
And I see that presently so many youth of that age, not the children who are in college, it's they, I think, who are very, very vulnerable. And a lot of mistakes, decisions are made at that age, which will then, you know, later translate into something they cannot reverse at an age. So I think it is, because I can recall like very small instances, but the very first one, when I joined for work over here, in fact, when I first joined for the job, I joined here in Radio Sai,
right?
Yeah. So my first boss, so to speak, was Professor Venkatraman. And I remember Swami turning to him and looking at the two of us who had joined together. Swami said, "Veellaki baaga pani pettu. Now give them so much work, like snow them in work." And what was left unsaid was such that they do not have time at all to think about, you know, the other things, the things that could distract them. Right? And that's why the focus used to be always Swami. And or it used to be either you are either at work or you are at Mandir.
Right?
That was the kind of discipline that Swami had imposed on us, not students, those of us who had joined the job.
Right.
And I think that is where, you know, some kind of counseling, I do not know what kind of structure it will require society to, because at present society has kind of diluted that structure of parental counseling, right, or the elders counseling, because presently the trend is that you are kind of developing the distance, no? The Western model, right, of developing the distance between the parents and the children as soon as they start taking up a job. So that we got to look for a replacement in society for that kind of input.
Right. I mean, it goes back to what Swami was saying about, you know, this age being an age of agitation.
Yeah.
As you were saying, Swami is saying that it is quite natural that it happens at this age, because, I mean, that is the characteristic of this age. But when Swami goes on to say this very beautifully, he says, so the way you have to counter that is when you cultivate peace. And two things. One is be aware that the agitation happens and try to cultivate peace. I think that is what we need to help people in this age, I mean, which of course includes all of us, you know, when we make decisions. The moment you're aware that you are vulnerable to making emotional decisions, you're vulnerable to making decisions that you could regret later, you will at least be a little more cautious.
Yes.
And I think that is what needs to be taught. And Swami is saying that try to be peaceful. Try to do what calls for making you peaceful. That's when Swami goes on to talk about meditation and all that. Because you don't need meditation when you're already calm and you're in a state where you're I mean, you have enough risks to worry about. You know, the moment you're married, you have your people dependent on you, you will take risks much lesser. Right? That's when you already start slowing down and you start weighing options before you take a decision.
Yeah.
Swami is saying that this is the age of youth where there's enthusiasm, where there's exuberance. You need peace at this time. You need that few seconds more before you take any decision at this point in time, and that is why meditation is more important at this age than later.
Exactly. So, I was, you know, what prompted this was like almost a year back. I remember one small incident that happened. I was familiar with a youth. He's not a student from here, but somebody who joined into a very good job, you know, very good job profile, and some, you know, 1 month into his job, they have a probation period of 3 months. 1 month into his job, he picks up a major role with his boss. And obviously, and he writes some, you know, inflammatory mail, and he's very quickly shown the door, you know, like, so suddenly it dawned on him, you know, that I have this anger problem and I don't know what to do about it, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so somehow, like, he called me and I was talking to him and I said, see, the one thing that is going to work for you is that the boss will remember what he was like in your age, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you'll have to go and somehow find time with him and talk to him and ask for his forgiveness that this happened. But at the same time, you should be so aware that you have come very close to derailing your career.
Mm.
Right? And that's it. Luckily worked out for him. You know, the boss was compassionate. He's spoken to him. But I was just thinking that if it had not, things had not turned out that way for him, right? That somehow in that one burst of emotion, he literally has thrown his hard fought career, you know, straight off like that, and it will take a long time to rebound, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so somewhere that is what I was thinking, that, you know, what can be done, right, for that age group, which we normally think is out of this,
mm-hmm.
the need for such input.
Right. You know, there's I don't recall where I heard this, I think one of the discussions about the modern generation, and the point which came up there was the influence that technology is having on the rest of our lives.
Mm.
Right? They were talking about most of our interaction with the social media involves our ability to correct what we have put out there, edit what you have done. You know, you take a picture, you can edit it to appear more beautiful than it was when you actually shot it. Or you can write something and, you know, you've made a mistake, you can edit it. So there is this, there was this belief that, you know, this idea that I can change what I've put out there.
Mm.
You know, there is an undo button in, you know, and you end up doing or taking decisions in life with the idea that, I mean, with that same kind of rashness which you do when you're, you know, typing something which you can always go back and edit.
Right.
So it's very important, as you're saying. I mean, I think many, many jobs have been lost because of angry mails. I think that is where it comes, you know, when Swami speaks about meditation, you can see that clear difference between someone who is grounded or has a spiritual backing, where the ability to stop before you speak something,
right.
The ability to, you know, think once, if not more, before you say something which could hurt somebody or harm somebody, because Swami is saying that's the natural thing, you know, so beautifully Swami is saying, because the blood is warm at that age. You want to fire back, you want to say something very curt, you want to say something, you know, which is sarcastic. I mean, it's a challenge, really. And if at this age you can do that, I think that is where, you know, really people stand out. When you see people in middle age who are so much more calm, probably they would have been much, much better at handling themselves at an earlier age.
Or they worked hard on that.
Worked hard on that, really.
Not all of us would be that lucky to enter into that age with a mature outlook. But yes, I mean, if we seek that kind of help or that kind of training, it's definitely available. And which is why Swami is making this, what shall we say, the exhortation that one must start this process early. Like when he says, like, start early, drive slowly and reach safely. One thing is definitely our mind is more plastic as our brains themselves like tend to be more plastic as we age, and we are less likely to put into effect new ideas.
True.
We might be able to appreciate them theoretically, but you know, like just as we have muscle memory, the brain itself has that kind of muscle memory. So in the moment of crisis, you're always going to fall back into things that have already worked for you before.
Right.
And if you've not exercised your discrimination previously, at the time of youth, you know, that this is the course of action that I will take, these are the principles that I will hold on to. Unless that muscle has been exercised before, no matter how much you speak at a platform saying that these are the values, you know, truth, honesty, sincerity, when the rubber meets the road, you will still fall back on what you've been doing earlier. And hence Swami is saying that this must be a constant exercise, or it's futile at the end of your, you know, and somehow, you know, I'm just looking at this, that this is a discourse that is given in 1991, and somehow Swami is anticipating precisely what happens in the present age. See, I think in 1991, 95% of the people who retired were actually completely retired.
Right.
But it is in this present day society we see that people beyond that, they somehow, you know, there is, of course, they are physically fit, mentally fit, and this, it's very much that you still want to contribute, right? And that excitement is still there of being, you know, relevant and in the field, right? But Swami is saying that it therefore never happens. When you put it off saying that, okay, when I'm done with the job, when I'm done with all my familial responsibilities, that is when I'll enter completely into spirituality. There is no telling what will happen. You might find yourself in a position where you have to continue slogging at your job, like right till you drop dead,
right.
Literally.
I was listening to this talk by, I don't know if you have read his books, Devdutt Patnaik. Now, he was talking about this idea of the four ashramas of life in corporate life.
Right.
And you're saying why the absence of that structure is what is causing all the problem in the corporate scenario. So he was telling, you know, this brahmacharya period, or that period where you're supposed to be a student, he was saying that actually extends even after you start earning. It means that is a phase when you're not supposed to think about the remuneration that you're getting. You have to think about the learning that is the job is offering you.
Okay.
So he said that there should be that phase where the young recruits are thinking about learning and not about how much money they're getting.
Right.
And then he was talking about, of course, when you go to the grihastha, Swami would say that's like the stomach. That's like the place which nourishes the whole body. And that's the phase in which you really work hard, you contribute to society, you're the center of the whole corporate structure.
Right.
And then he was saying that after retirement comes this period of vanaprastha, which is actually absent in corporate life completely. Where you again go back to a little bit of that celibate state, where you're not interested in the money, you're not interested in what you're drawing out of it, but you're trying to pass on your learning to the next generation.
Okay.
Where you're still in society, you're still very active, but your role is to pass on what you've learned, you pass on your experience.
Right.
Not about the money that you can still make.
Right.
And then at a point you have to go to sannyasa. You have to withdraw completely from the thing. So you're saying that now the problem is people have removed that vanaprastha stage. They're in that grihastha stage, what Swami also speaks about in general social life also. You're like in that grihastha stage till the very end, and then you suddenly vanish from the scene, because as you're saying, you work till you drop dead. You do not have the opportunity even to pass on your learning completely to, you know, the next generation. Because you're always in that mode of trying to grab and gain, you know, in the process.
Yeah. And right now even like learning itself, the sands are shifting so fast that what you learned like 5 years back is no longer relevant today. It's already getting replaced at a pace, that frenetic pace, that maybe we are not able to keep up. So that's why like there's always a churn going on, right? And so a stage may come where you are absolutely so not able to transmit your knowledge also. The society is shifting so fast, right? So therefore, it's important to look at like what can we anchor ourselves on when everything around us is changing, when everything around us is shifting. Like, what are the essentials that will keep society together? Now the bare bone structure of why society develops, right? It is because we recognize that a man is a social creature, and a person on his own, right, is less advantaged than if he cooperates with more individuals. which is why the family structure evolves. Right? That the upbringing of, see, the earlier the upbringing of a child was not just the responsibility of that household.
Right.
In fact, it used to be the responsibility of the entire community. You know, they used to look upon themselves like if one person, a youth, and that person has strayed, it was a stain on the community. Not on just that household, right? They used to look at like, what is it that we are missing? You know, what is this community missing that this youth has gone astray?
True.
And now it is, we do not know in whose hands it is. Like, may not even be the parents.
I mean, even as we were completely reiterating over and over again that, you know, this is the age which is important, the adolescence or that early adult age. I hope we are not alienating some of the listeners who are past the middle age, because one thing we have to remember is this is a discourse which Swami is giving to college students, and so Swami is emphasizing and literally with a sense of urgency that you have to start early, you have to start at this age. If you missed out, I think, you know, it's like as I was saying on the other program, it's like Google Maps. You miss a turn, it'll always reroute and it'll tell you which is the next thing you have to do. Mm. So if you've come late to the spiritual fold, if you've come late to Swami, there still is always hope. It's not like everything is lost and there is no hope. You can still always start, but it's much easier if this journey starts early. And I think that is the advantage which some people have. I've mentioned this many times before when we were talking to one of the very senior professors who's no more with us, Professor Habu. He would say this. You know, he came to Swami in the 1960s. So we used to say him, sir, you're so fortunate that you've come so early to Swami. So he would say, no, you are all fortunate because you have come early to Swami.
Hmm.
He would say that I came to Swami when I was 40. You've come to Swami when you're 17 and 18. So you are the ones who are lucky. And you know how true that is when Swami is saying that this is the age you have to start. You have to start early.
Hmm.
The advantage that an early beginning gives is tremendous. I think that's what Swami is saying. In fact, the whole idea which Swami was conveying here that you need to start early, drive slowly, is what Krishna tells Arjuna when he tells him, you know, the one who thinks of me in the last moments of his death will certainly reach me. But then the shlokas which follow that explanation that Krishna gives, he's saying that, but it's not easy. It'll only happen if you have thought of me whatever you were doing, wherever you are, in whatever circumstances you were, only then you can think of me in the last moments. I think that is what Swami is saying, that you have to start early and fill your entire life with that contemplation so that at last moment, by default, that thought of God comes.
Yes, and so many times Swami used to say that, you know, that the person escaped with the Lord's name on his lips and how fortunate
right. He
is, right? That and that can come, as you rightly said, with not part-time devotion, as Swami used to call.
Sure.
That, but it has to be full-time. And I was just thinking also that even as we are speaking about this program, that how many people are using the opportunity, like for a commute to their work, to listen to the Radio Sai programs. That
sure.
So in a sense, like Swami has filled it because of a love for him. He's ensured that we are doing this, that we are constantly thinking of him, you know, through either listening to his programs, attending the bhajans in the Sai centers, and all devotees, Swami has given this wonderful opportunity that twice in a year, you know, you have the structure where you can actually come and serve him physically at Prashanti Nilayam, right, where you can actually immerse yourself in the ashram, right, like in its ways, and serving Swami directly. All these opportunities Swami has given all of us. It is just the resource, our willingness to dip into it. If you want to dip into it, there's no end, you know. Swami has given that. He's ensured that we can we have the resources in order for us to contemplate on him, to practice his teachings, because in the end, that's exactly what he says, that I have spoken all of this for the last 14 days, and which we ourselves have been now, you know, deliberating over several months. I hope you put at least a fraction of this into practice. And that is what finally satisfies Bhagwan. That having listened to all of this, like, how can we put this into practice. And one thing, you know, you are making that reference to one very beautiful example that which Swami gave, that when the room is dark, right, all it takes is for one person to light the lamp. And it reminded me of something that Nisargadatta Maharaj said, a very powerful thought. And he said that the very mention of enlightenment to a person, he said, it is like setting a ball of cotton, right, a spark into a ball of cotton.
Okay.
He says that nothing can then stop the progress of that spark to consume the entire ball of cotton. He says, even if it is like wagons full of cotton, that one small spark is sufficient to consume the whole thing. And he says the very mention of the possibility of enlightenment to a person is like that. It is like a spark that is which catches on to that ball of cotton and consumes it in no time. He says, rest assured that it will happen.
that's really a beautiful example, because that's one of the examples which Swami gave in the course of this discourse, is about the innate nature of fire. Swami is talking about the dharma of fire is to be bright and to be hot. And that's what Swami ends with. Swami is saying that this is your nature. This is not something which comes from outside. This is your nature. And I recall another beautiful quote. I think it was made by one of the army generals. He said, you know, it's a very beautiful and very profound quote. He says, all the darkness in the world does not have the power to put out the light of one candle. You know, it's a very beautiful, there could be any amount of darkness, but that light of one candle will remain. And that's what Swami is saying, that if you go back to your true nature, and if that true nature starts shining, it doesn't matter what is around you. It doesn't matter whether the society is adharmic, whether, you know, there people around you are right or wrong. It really doesn't matter whether you're going through difficulties, like what Swami explained about Prahlada. You will remain to be that. And the whole idea is, in the midst of all you go through in life, to remain what you're supposed to be. That is the idea of dharma, as Swami so beautifully explained. It is about being your own true nature, right? I think maybe we'll have to end with that, because that's what Swami has said in this discourse, a very, very beautiful discourse. Towards the end, I think the last thing which Swami says is, it all starts with humility. Swami is saying, get rid of ego, it starts with humility. I think in the end, Swami is giving one tip, if not any of all what has been spoken in the 13 discourses, Swami is saying, start with humility. And that will take you in, that's the beauty. Swami saying that your nature is divinity, but you cultivate humility. I think the whole of spirituality can be put in that one paradox, where you realize that you're not ordinary. At the same time, you develop humility, you know, of being just one spark in the many.
And that is essentially the message of the Upanishads. The Upanishads are a repository of learning. And you have to approach that huge repository, which is something that which there is no training, right? Which can you can't do it like for a period of 6 months and get a certification saying that now I'm trained in, you know, Upanishads.
Right.
It's a process of rediscovery. I'm pretty sure that we can repeat this entire program, and you know, we could go through segments of it, and we'll find ourselves speaking anew. We could almost do this like say 5 years from now, right?
And absolutely,
we'll have completely a different perspective, and that perspective will develop if we allow life to contribute to us by with its experiences.
So I think with that hope, we will end this program, because the Shravanam, Mananam, Nididhyasanam will have to continue. It's not, the discourse will never be old. You know, you could listen to these discourses again and again. We hope that each one of us will do that Mananam in our own time, and as always, pray to Swami for the Nididhyasanam to happen. So dear listeners, with that we conclude the 13 discourses of this series. We'll of course come back next week. We'll try to probably summarize the discourses that we have gone through. But this is where the discourses end. So on behalf of Hari and on behalf of Saiprakash, who was there earlier when we started this program, we thank you all for joining us, and thank you for being with us throughout this journey. We're going to end with the bhajan that Swami sang at the end of this discourse. On the other side of it, you'll be joined by Brother Bishu for the last segment of today, the Vahini Satsang. Once again, before we leave you, a very happy and holy Deepavali to each one of you.
भजन बिना सुख शांति नहीं हरि भजन बिना सुख शांति नहीं हरि नाम बिना आनंद नहीं हरि नाम बिना आनंद नहीं हरि भजन बिना सुख शांति नहीं जप जान बिना तन योग नहीं जप प्रभु दर्श बिना प्रज्ञान नहीं दय धर्म बिना सत्कर्म नहीं भगवान बिना कोई अपना नहीं हरि नाम बिना परमात्मा नहीं हरि नाम बिना परमात्मा नहीं हरि भजन
ఒక్క చక్రము యొక్క సైకిల్ ఏనాటి కూడా మనం ప్రమాదమే.